Well, a little bit of added extra bonus for you there, Nick. The amount of guff he's got to listen to.
They're bad. They're boys. And occasionally, they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back. Baby, come back.
With a bye, 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 bye. With a bye, 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 bye. I must admit I was a clone to be messing around. But that doesn't mean that you have to leave town.
Bye, 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 bye. Bye, 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 bye. Hello. Hey. Hello, Jody Rainsford.
You don't do the "ay" bit anymore.
Hey.
Why have you stopped doing that? Like, there's so much
on.
Change going on in the podcast.
There is.
Decided to...
I'm overwhelmed. Actually... Probably as much as a listener is. And welcome to what is not known as the guff. Jody has been telling me that's not going to help us grow listeners. It's now the bad stuff. Welcome to the bad stuff. Is that better?
Yeah, in many ways that won't necessarily win us any more listeners. it's just, I think if you call it the guff. The thing is, we've been calling it the guff like for weeks. And because we haven't thought of another name. If the listener could come up with a better name, I'll happily go with that. But that's what we're dealing with at the moment.
But welcome to the bad stuff. Now, we've got quite a lot of follow-ups following Garmingate, which people passionate about being negged from their Garmin, I've got to say. But we have got, let's have a look. Well, backyard, isn't it weird how articles suddenly pop up on the BBC or on mainstream media that are not at all relevant to what's happening, like about a race that is half a year old or...
Well, that's just the thing. That's just the thing, isn't it? Anything like mainstream that pops up is always... It's never around the time, is it? It's just as and when. Because I think the one on the BBC is one of their long reads, isn't it? And it's a really, really good read. I mean, I was like going, oh, I'm going to give this a quick read before. And I was like, oh, this is a bit... I don't know if we need to go into this. So I just looked at all the pictures on it, looked at all the pictures, read the captions. I thought, yeah, I've got a good sense of what they're trying to get at there.
But actually, I've got a few things pulled out for us to talk about this week that are actually about media and how things are perceived. But having read the article, and if you Google backyard and then BBC, it will come up, I'm sure.
Big and backyard ultra. It's like using the full name as well, isn't it? It's like when you when you're underage and you go into a pub and you say, "Oh, can I have a pint of Stella Artois?" It's a little bit like that. You're like, "Oh, there's something dodgy going on here."
Or full pints of Stella for exact change, please. But I've skim read it and it was interesting to be like, why is this article here now? And actually, you notice I didn't make it through to the bottom. I started skimming myself.
I'd like to. Did any listeners make it through to the bottom? Did they through all the way?
Do you think it's their analogy? It's their way of demonstrating what the what Biggs is like. Is
no, it shouldn't, because what they should do is they should stop the article. And they should publish the second part of the article every hour on the hour.
So but now you've got, it's not the second part, it's the first part again. You've got to go back.
No, that's called Runner's World.
That is true. But every 3 years. Sorry, Runner's World. Sorry, Ben, we do love you. Sorry, Kerry, we love you.
9 months.
what I found really interesting about this is like, why is this cropped up now? And I think, if you look at the thread, they're referring to some of the runners there, but actually Dave Proctor, I think his first name was David. I've not written down his first name because I was just cropping the section.
You went to public school, didn't you? And you never use first name. Proctor.
Proctor. He keeps on cropping up, and it turns out he's going to be trying to run across Canada. Though I think this is actually some savvy...
There's always an agenda, isn't it? There's always an agenda somewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, if he's created this, fair play, because it's quite a lot of work, crowbarring the fact that you're you're going for a record to run across Canada.
What do you mean? People write entire books on that. You know, in order to, I'm looking at the mindset of runners, or I'm looking at, you know, the thoughts behind why we run. But actually, it's just a massive ploy for me to write a book and get like some kind of advance so that I can go off and do Spartathlon or something else. Like it's well known. It's a well known tactic.
I mean, if that is your ploy, fair play, because I think any way you can get people to pay for you to do cool things is yeah, respect. As long as it's not by pretending it's donations. Running around the world, say no more. But I don't know what we can say about that. Anyway, something in the article that I thought was quite fun was he was saying that one of the hardest aspects of it is when the whistle goes, you then have to get up off the seat, and it's getting to the start line. There's that decision there. And so he said that part of his training, and you never know things like this, it's the type of thing that we'd say that we do when we never do it. We just know it's easier to make a good story than to actually do it.
Funny anecdote type thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Myth and legend.
So Gary Laz does his whistle 2 minutes before each lap. And that becomes a trigger for a lot of people because it's that, oh, God, I've got to wake up. Oh, God, I've got to move again. And so he claims, and I mean, I've got no reason to doubt him, to be fair, that he would he'd blow his whistle and then he'd do things he loved. So he'd blow his whistle and he'd hug his kids, or he'd blow his whistle and he'd eat cookies. And so whenever he's going to do anything really positive, he'd reinforce the association with the whistle and positive. And because I mean, that would be pretty weird, wouldn't it? If you're gonna hug your kids goodnight.
It could go the other way. It's like when you go to hug your kids, you think of the whistle in the background.
Oh yeah.
Like, you recoil from them in horror, and all of a sudden you hate cookies. It can go the other way. It's a very, very dangerous precedent.
Do you reckon if he lived near someone like a train station with lots of whistles, he could put on a huge amount of weight with this? It's suddenly against the cookie shop.
But kids would resent him. Stop touching us! Stop hugging us! Stop being so tactile! It's awful! Get off!
Your sports day would be awkward, wouldn't it? Yeah. That is for sure.
I don't know how effectively that works in a running environment. The premise of it sounds it. The theory of it sounds perfectly good. But, you know, can you, like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll train myself every time I bonk to think happy thoughts so that I can get through it. Or, you know, every time, yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. Every time my Garmin says something offensive to me, I'll think happy thoughts and, you know, associate that with rainbows and unicorns. I don't know. I just don't know if it works in the same sense, because your body goes through, you know, genuine physiological changes. And I suppose you know what your emotion's going to be like at those different times.
So do you think you can Pavlov dog it, but then you can de-dog?
De-Pavlov.
De-Pavlov. You're de-training. You're de-Pav. But do better. Has anyone else tried weird things like this? Psychological tricks? Try and train themselves into some kind of advantage, or actually to break a association they have.
Could you use hypnotherapy to be a better runner? I'm sure I've heard of this. I'm sure people, I know that people, you know, they go to psychologists and stuff to talk around it, but I wonder if you could just bypass all the talking and go straight into the subconscious and use hypnotherapy. I'm sure it's been used before, but have like normal runners used it to you know, whether it's about distance or speed or but their feelings about something that happens on a race, or being worried about some type of their athletic performance, you know, just that would make more sense rather than spending all that time training.
I'd imagine though that would take hours and hours, wouldn't it? And about a thousand pounds.
I was reading something about this woman that runs that. She goes, you've got to give it six sessions, because six sessions is what it takes. So
do you think when she says you've got to do it six sessions, has she looked at her customer acquisition costs and she's figured out her lifetime value and she makes a profit after six sessions?
makes a profit after five sessions.
After six sessions, this was pure profit.
This was a perfect example of a completely pointless journalism article. So I read this thing thinking, like, this talk about Hitler therapy and about how, you know, the woman that was
talking about... Did you call it Hitler therapy?
Hitler therapy, that's an entirely...
Wow, I mean, that is a way to sleepwalk into a world war, isn't it?
How would that work, Hitler therapy? Where
was it? You are feeling sleepy. Nine! You are falling. Yeah, I mean, we maybe shouldn't pursue this because we're going to get ourselves in trouble, aren't we?
You know, if ever there was a period of time that this would not be accepted, probably now is the...
Although, are you going to write it down? I've got a list of
lexicon. I'm going to write it down,
lexicon. Hitler therapy, what
you
is that going to be?
These things go in cycles. These things go in cycles. You never know. At some point, Hitler might be popular again or something. But yeah.
I've written it down so that at some point we're just going to be talking in an interview, and they're going to say something, and I'll be like, "That's bloody Hitler therapy, isn't it? That is what it is. It explains what we could." You know, when you reverse, you've got something that is a great phrase, but you don't know what it means yet. We're going
to
wait.
We don't know to use it. We'll keep throwing it in till we find the meaning for...
Yeah, do badders. Email letters at badboyrunning.com. And we are responding to them now. And we are reading them now. What is Hitler therapy? And it has to be something that we can read out to, not to children, but to...
We're I'd not say... just going to go to a school and start reading it.
Something that if we... Something that won't get us in jail, but yeah, primarily that. So
this article I was reading it's a typical pointless journalist thing. So it was what she had to do. She had to investigate the value of hypnotherapy, and I think this other woman had used it in order to successfully lose weight and to stop smoking and all these different things. And she couldn't
afford food anymore.
Exactly that, but she could have thought there. But she did it, and so this journalist was, you know, supposed to do it. And she had this interview. She went through the story. She said, "You've got to have six sessions as a minimum. Give it six sessions, and you know, you are make your judgment." Then the journalist couldn't even make it to six sessions. this journalist couldn't. She made it to three sessions, and the culmination of this article was that, oh, after three sessions, I realised I didn't really want to give up biscuits because I love them so much. You're like, that has almost completely failed. I mean, and the point is that the hypnotherapist, a guru or whatever, was saying you kind of need to want to do the thing as well. And, you know, the journalist couldn't even make it halfway through sitting there in hypnotherapy sessions. It was one of those articles where you're just like, what is the point of any of this? You have done an interview and then failed in the participation bit, which I understand is a little bit ironic, me saying that.
The journalist has decided they thought, I'm going to do an article on this, but I've got nothing I want to give up, so I'm going to pretend that I want to give up biscuits.
Yeah.
But actually...
I'll shoehorn a bit of my own story in there, but it'll be pathetic. And it was.
And they're probably working to a deadline as well, and six sessions wouldn't necessarily allow for that deadline to be reached. So she probably had the publishing deadline before the fourth session.
You're making excuses for her there. I would go down to pure laziness.
True, which we do respect.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I used to write an article called The Blagger's Guide, and half of the stories are made up. I'm just blagging the actual...
Actually, I mean, to be fair, that makes perfect sense.
People had to challenge me. They didn't know it was me. I'd be like, well, this is a big reveal. So if anyone's still listening from university who read the student newspaper, Felix, there was an article called The Blagger's Guide that I did that people would write in challenges saying, you've got to try and blag a free this, you've got to try and blag a free that. And some of them I would do. Some of them I just couldn't be bothered. But they'd be quite elaborate because you, for the sake of the article, you have to do quite different strategies each week or else it's just boring. Like getting free taxi journeys, getting free rides, free meals. But it's quite coming up with the idea.
It feels like it was a training ground for you.
Yeah.
Hey, David, do you have your haircut? Where did you get your haircut?
Obviously, Total Barber Academy, free haircuts.
I like the way Briggsy went, classic David.
Yeah. I mean, she got it was, but I had a new hairdresser who it was his first week. Bless him, he was the nicest guy. But I've never realised how easily influenced we are by positive reinforcement. And he honestly had never heard of a haircut like this. Where so it's for the listener at home who's imagining me as a I don't know what you'd imagine me like as. Well, I've got grade one hair all the way up to a side.
Wing gay commentator.
You are thinking of me. I was trying to do a hypnotherapy thing, didn't work.
Anyway. Of me.
I've got a grade one haircut all the way up to the parting, and this blew his mind. And it was weird. He was from East London, and he was like, "Whoa!" And he was so positive about how my haircut was. He's like, "This is amazing. Can I take a photo? This is such a cool haircut." And I left. My haircut could have been a pile of crud, but I left feeling like the coolest person on earth. So, I think we need to be more positive in general. If you're listening to this now, you were killing this run. You were crushing this run, my man. Your haircut is amazing. Yes, I'm talking to you. You. Yes. Anyway, that was an aside. Did you see Des Linden break the 50K record?
Yep.
Yeah. So that in itself, I guess, kind of interesting. Is it interesting? Is it not? She won the Boston Marathon. She's an amazing marathon runner. She ran 8K more. She got the record because no one's really set that one. What is interesting, actually, I think she's got the American record overall, because it used to be Mike Edwardian. And obviously that's a very old record coming back from the Edwardian days.
Mike Edwardian?
Yeah, as he's now known. He's coming back on the podcast, by the way,
no,
to talk
great.
About Spartan Games.
That, which, I love that. I love that, because probably that Spartan Games thing was really good. But actually, like, it was... I think the really interesting stories in that were all of the ones where people were doing stuff that they'd never done before, and they were totally out of their comfort zone. So that was it. And they were quite stuff like that. And if there was one person that was out of their comfort zone, like, credit to him. He was so far behind the whole thing, and his body is just not made for all of that stuff. But wow, he's, you know, what absolute legend for pushing
absolute.
Right to the end.
And the fact that he... That. And he is a fun guy. We know this already. But the fact that he clearly gets that we want to talk about his biggest failure, and he's happy
is
to do that.
Is it a failure?
That's true. You're there. Right.
Is it a failure? It's not a failure at all.
So we're doing positive reinforcement, aren't we? Yeah.
How many elite ultra runners would have put themselves in that situation? With all of those people knowing there is no way I am going to win this. There's no way I'm going to place it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be made to look utterly ridiculous by this. And I very, very few would do it with the kind of the grace and the humour and everything that went that he did it. He made it worth watching.
Yeah, he did. Well, so that will be out in about, given that I'm just lining up now, so that will be in about 3 months' time. So hang on in there, guys.
Spartan Games 2 is out.
It would be a trailer. But interestingly about the Des Linden story is, well, for one, marathon runners slowly drifting up, which is something I'd really like to see. It's not great for us as ultra runners, because it makes people realise just how crap we are. But I think it is. It will happen more and more. But there was a lot of talk about the fact that she hyped this run in advance, and it she did a good job at it, actually. For a record that no one generally cares about, it was talked about in advance in a lot of places and afterwards, which she came under a bit of attack for. And this is why I thought it was quite interesting, because there was also a suggestion that only the females in the sport really get attacked for hyping stuff. And like Camille gets it quite a bit, and she's talked about feeling ostracized in the community. Although, you know, I think she has, you know, she's done well to play on that. And whether we think this is this a, you know, double double standard where, you know, if a Jim Walmsley or someone else comes out, Pau Capet, when he's doing the going for a sub 20 UTMB, whether, you know, they hype stuff and people love it and they get on board. Whereas when the women do it, people call them out as it for doing that. And I mean, do you think that's have you picked up on that as well?
I've not picked up on that. I think there's generally I mean, it's the general thing is that anyone that says they're going to do something gets attacked massively if they don't have a track record in it. Like, you know, the bigger I don't know. It's really weird, isn't it? Like, it's all around perception. Like, it's really interesting. I read something the other day, and again, I can't remember. And this is media the way that the media presents it, saying that I can't remember the exact thing, but saying that, you know, certain people were attacking something. And then when you actually read into the story,
oh yeah, it's just
like,
one.
It's like three people on Twitter.
Yeah,
and you're like, what? I mean, like journalistic integrity and any kind of like integrity around that would point to the fact that there is, you know, three people attacking something is not an attack. It's three people, you know, and you go through and you look at their Twitter accounts and there's like 67 followers or something like that. You're like, how is this getting like major national news coverage? You know, what happened to things like fact checking? What happened to things like proportionality and stuff like that? And it's, again, it goes back to that sort of clickbaity aspect as well. And so, I wondered, like, how much, I don't doubt, I'm just, you know, just underline this, I don't doubt that women get it worse than men, because that is just the reality of it at the moment as well.
But you think it's also irresponsible journalism?
But you know, I think there's a certain amount of irresponsibility about how things are presented as well, because it's in their interest to when they come up, you know, when they're promoting these things, to make them seem slightly more confrontational than they are.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, I don't mean that the attacks aren't confrontational. I'm like, someone says, oh, I'm going to, it's my aim to do something. I think this happened with Camille. I'm going to do something. And then it's splashed all over the press, like, you know, so-and-so lays down the gauntlet. So-and-so, yeah, it's framed in much more aggressive terms than they may have presented it themselves, and then that is sort of in order to create that discussion and everything. And I don't, you know, and of course, you know, that's their, I suppose they'll go, that's their job as the media or as journalists in the way it's presented. But actually,
well, it's not their job. Actually, their job is to report on what's happening rather than to, well, it depends if you're the Daily Mail, or it's their job is to inflame, right? And so therefore they try and represent. I always get this whenever I'm in the morning on my phone, it will say, I've watched Bake Off the night before. I've watched something like that. And then it's like, fans furious at blah, 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 blah.
Fans furious at something on Bake Off is insane. And then what is this fury? And like, again, three people on Twitter saying something. You're like,
yeah, and a lot of, but it is quite, I do think it does have a drop effect on people's psyche, and that we always talk about the snowflake generation, and actually the snowflake generation is just journalists saying that three people have said these things, because we never actually know. Now, even like people who are against statues, there's not that many people who are against a lot of statues. It's just a very vocal group who are very successful at getting in the media for it, because the media are desperate to tell stories that will outrage older people.
And that's do you know what? That's funny. Like Extinction Rebellion say they don't want to do like ridiculous stunts, but it's the only thing that they can do because the media will take notice. And you know, and it's kind of like that, isn't it? Have you ever? I know I'm going to say something weird here. Have you ever read the Express, Daily Express? They are. What? Because they're always trying to find anti-EU, pro-Brexit stuff. And the lengths they'll go to fight, they will, like, trawl, like, parliamentary reports to find, like, one comment a Dutch MEP said in order to try and kind of attack Ursula von der Leyen or something like
that. Greece MP says that your car will have to be right-hand drive from from now on. What?
But yeah, it's a, that's basically what Boris did when he was at the Telegraph.
Yeah, true.
But this, they would try and find something that was anti-EU, said by someone in the EU, but they would go to incredible lengths in order to find these things. And it's kind of like that. But it does feel as though, how was she promoting it? How was she talking it up? Was it to the press or was it on her own feed? How much control did she have over the message before she started being attacked? And who was attacking her?
Well, I think she was promoting it up because why not? I mean, she's going for a new record. She's the Boston Marathon champion. People want to know what she's doing. She's going for a record. Hell yeah. Tell us about it. It engages more people.
We were saying that this is what we need. We need people to have a little bit more like a Conor McGregor thing. I'm going to do this in this round. Or Muhammad Ali. I'm going to win this. I'm going to knock him out. And I'm going to, that's good. That's good. Why shouldn't people be like that?
And also, and part of it is getting in the media and inspiring people and getting people who aren't runners to think about running, or people who have run only a 10K to think, well, maybe I'm going to try something a bit longer. And yeah.
How did Kipchoge talk about doing the break in two? How did he talk about it? He never talked about it in kind of like, I'm going to go out there and smash this. This is going to be this. Records will tumble.
That's not his style though, is it?
I know, but it could have done with a bit of that, couldn't it? Fireworks, jets. Giving it
He should be like, he should have been in front of the number two boxing it, that type of thing.
Blowing it up, kicking
no
it.
No more two. He should have just sent us a video clip of him running and we'd have done the backdrop with the visual effects. That would have worked.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? The thing is that it's just not normal. It's just to see people like talking it up. I suppose with Camille, when like they say, what's your aim, Camille? And she's like, to be the greatest. You're like, come on. But people find that threatening. Some people find that really threatening in a sport where everyone cares so much, especially sort of top level. Everyone cares so much about their times and they've got fragile little egos, blah, 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 blah. And then someone's coming along going, I'm going to smash everything. It's just like, you're supposed to be really demure and you're supposed to go, I'll do, I'll put my best performance in and stuff like that. And you're like, fuck that. Why have you got to say that? They can say whatever they want. I love that.
Yeah. And actually, we've always talked from the start, DNF, PB or DNF has been one of our phrases. And one of the great things about people talking up things in advance is that you actually find out when they fail. And previously, if people are only talking about when things go well, it seems like everyone is always hitting their achievements. Yeah, always bollocks. Failure is just doesn't happen to other people, and it has to be the be all and end all is never to fail. But actually, aim big. If you fail, great, aim again.
That's it. Actually, very, very public failure that's owned by the people as well. That's great. That's exactly
like Mike Edwardian. That wasn't Mike. Still come on.
but that's a perfect example. That is an absolutely perfect example where there was no chance that he was going to win that or anything. But he didn't mind very publicly failing, and that's the thing. Yeah. Hyping stuff up is exactly what you want to do. That's what you need to do if you want the sport to expand. Yeah. The problem with ultra running is that, no one's hyped it up. Like my parents, right at the start of when I was started doing ultras and stuff like that, would come along and support. And, they'd be standing there and they'd be talking to someone and people would know nothing about this race that was going on, literally on their doorstep. And my parents were really surprised. I'm like, yeah, because it's just no one knows about it. It's tiny. But if the sport is supposed to, is going to, really, push into the realms of, much more sort of public visibility, and even, if they want it to become an Olympic sport, then more people need to hype it up, and more people need to be talking about these challenges, and more people need to be doing that. And it doesn't help them, you have people within the community trying to drag them down and give them abuse. But then runs at dicks.
Should we have a hype of the week for the do-badders?
Hype of the week?
obviously,
well, it, and it could be any. It could be like the. I'm just going to finish Parkrun, like that kind of hype. Or
no, I think it needs to be. There always has to be at least a 60% chance of failure.
How do you? So, oh, that's a very specific algorithm you've got going on. What's this Hallardian algorithm that? I want to hear just, an example of how this works.
It just felt right. So, for example, mine would be that. When I did the Heathside challenge, when I came back from injury, I've told this story before, but every person from Heathside that beat me at the cross country, I was going to drink an alcoholic drink that night. Now that was something that had, when it ended, actually I think I succeeded, but I didn't realize how unfit I was, and 22 people beat me. So that was something where I went out hard.
What happened? So what did you have to do? You had to drink 22 drinks.
Yeah, that night.
Explain that. How did that? What? Does a shot count as one drink?
It did towards the end, and I don't know if I made it or not. I remember aggressively upping my shots, having been drinking pints all night, and realizing I was about 12 pints away from could barely walk.
From paralysis.
But that's the kind. Exactly. That's the kind of thing. But do badders, letters@badboyrunning.com or David or JD, we want to hear your hype of the week. And it doesn't have to be running related, but it has to be something that you're genuinely going for, that you don't, there's a big chance of failure.
And we don't want things that we know there's no chance of failure.
Of success.
Yeah. That's better. There's no chance. No, actually, that's better. If there's zero chance, I'm going to place top 10 in, you know, whatever. There's no chance that that's going to... And then they come back and tell us they were 637th. That's a good story.
Or if you can't be asked to email, just messages on Instagram or Facebook is probably easier.
Or shout it. Just shout it out a window. Yeah. If you can't even be asked to email us.
Yeah. But have you seen Kipchoge has been out there? I mean, it's kind of boring running news, but I guess we've got to mention it because he has.
This is when it's turned to. Everyone else has mentioned it. We better cursorily mention it in passing.
So Kipchoge's he's put on his own marathon in essence for him to win. So that when he wins it, he's like, guess who's back? Guess who's won another marathon?
Was it called the HH Marathon? It was run around an airport or something.
I think it's called Mission Marathon.
Wasn't it? MM Marathon, wasn't it? Yeah.
Which, I mean, Mission Marathon, he's always finished.
Marathon, that would have been a very different race.
Hello, I mean... In. How much a ticket?
With nuns running it, that's what I was going to say.
Double in. I mean, I've watched videos throughout my childhood of... part of me loves it, the gameplay, but he was running with one other guy who who was like a half-decent runner who he ended up beating by 6 minutes when he did in the last 10K. Which shows you how much better he was than that guy. And he ran a 2:04. So it's like, hey, you know, I could run really quick. Well, now you know I can run at a level that quite a few could still beat me at. Hey.
Hey, guys, that's it.
Hey. But interesting because it's, you know, the Olympics is, it's some distance away. Though maybe he didn't want to absolutely kill himself in this, but is he back to his best? Is he not? No one knows. Maybe that's what he wanted.
If you don't get to do a competitive, I just love the idea. I'll make up a race and I'll run it and that's it. I could do I want now, fastest man in the world.
Isn't that what I did on the Gillespie Road? That was the world's something that I was challenging John Alban to take me on at, and he's still never beaten me. Still never. The good thing is I've moved out, so.
Swedish runner, John Albion.
Yeah.
Norwegian runner. Gosh, shouldn't get that mixed up. Norwegian runner.
But what else have we got to talk about? Because I've been watching. This is not running related, but because of our obsession, I've got a couple of Russian stories. I'll space them out. Oh, God damn it. I thought I was being clever by taking a photo on my phone so I could read out, but this bloody app. Here we go. Now, have you ever heard of the Russian job website, superjob.ru? No, I take your silence. Do even mean
no,
like?
I haven't. No,
of course.
No, oddly enough, that hasn't cropped up this week.
So many things about this story I love. This is a short story.
I'm crying with laughter.
Why is it in English? Why is it not Russian words?
Super job is a universal language. It's a universal phrase.
It's almost like a super job. It would be anyway.
The thing is, you use the .ru to a much better effect. If you have I am your goo .ru, that would be amazing. Or running goo .ru.
I've got my website davidhellard.run. Kind of similar.
Is that trade descriptions?
That's true, actually. Anyway, so if you were superjob.ru, you wanted to promote your website, also maybe I won't say more than that. If you were looking to do something positive, and you were to run a poll of Russians voting on something, what would it be? What would you be voting on? Try and get a bit PR.
Russians. I don't know. Are Russians used to voting for something meaningful? I don't know. I suppose the question is, what does Putin think? And then that's the. What Russians? Is doping in Russia worse than anywhere else?
But that surely this is. Question. The superjob.ru, I'd assume, like, best place to work.
I think the doping thing's still relevant. It's a different thing.
Do Russians dope in
every
field of life?
Every aspect of their life. It doesn't matter. Oh, I'm a data entry clerk. Oh, man, I'm the best data entry clerk. There's an American data entry clerk over there who's being more productive than me, so I absolutely need to dope to do better than them.
Let us at badboyrunning.com. We actually are now in the Russian charts. I don't know who's listening. We're interesting enough. Of course, they have once again, so it's not the first time, done the poll of Russia's hottest man. Now, the winner of that poll, 18%, 18% of men and 17% of women named 68-year-old Bachelor as the country's most handsome man.
I need to see if is this funny. Do you think he's deserving of this award?
The picture they've chosen, he's wearing a lovely jacket. He's kind of in the snow. But what I love about it. So firstly, it's no great surprise that he's won. What I do appreciate though is that 19% of men voted for themselves. Which I respect Russian men for that. And 18% of women said there are no handsome men in Russia.
18%?
So firstly, I love Russian men. I love 90% of Russian men for voting for themselves. Respect. And I love the 18% of Russian women. I just thought, given our obsession with Russia at the moment, I've got to mention that little story in there.
That's nice. That's nice. I like that. I like the, if you can't vote for yourself, who can you vote for?
Absolutely. I wonder if Putin voted for himself as part of that 90%, or whether he's involved. And then another Russian story. I'll do another Russian story another week. But I wanted to talk about a future episode.
Oh.
And also one of our reviews.
Ooh.
Now, We have recently... We've been encouraging listeners to leave positive reviews, five-star reviews with humorous things in. And I was going through to...
It's a diktat from the top of the cult.
Exactly. Now, you have highlighted a bad review that we've had. And in a future episode, we were interviewed by a long-term listener, apparently. So we interview a long-term listener, apparently, who throughout the interview keeps on calling me Dan, which we don't pick up on.
Why do people think you're called Dan? I just don't get it. It's so funny.
Now, our only negative review in the last year or so has been the bad points of pointlessly unfunny chats at the start, which go on and on. Also, Dan's voice is like the character Toby Kebbell plays in Dead Man's Shoes. So, if we link those two together, our future guest, who we cannot say, not only have they come on and sown the seed, they've left little Easter eggs in the reviews for us to figure out who they are.
You've missed out on it because, although Dan's voice, this is the thing, we're talking, how do you do a review of something legitimately and then you get the name of the presenter? So it shows you that you've only listened to one episode or something, and or not even listened to it that well. Although Dan's voice is like character Toby Kebbell plays in Dead Man's Shoes, nasally, which becomes super grating if listened to for any length of time. Do you know the character Toby Kebbell plays in Dead Man's Shoes?
I mean, is it? I've not heard of Dead Man's Shoes. Is it?
Oh my God, have you not?
No. Is it well known?
It's like the yes. It's absolutely one of like the best British films in like the last, 10 or so years. No, probably older than 10 years now. I don't know. It's just utterly brilliant. It's such an amazing thing. Toby Kebbell plays the. I don't know what the right term is. The mentally disabled brother of the main character.
Okay, so it seems appropriate.
He has a speech impediment that goes with it as well. So this is not a positive, you have a gravitas in your voice type thing. But he does speak with a kind of a nasally. A speech impediment, which I find anyone that has watched Dead Man's Shoes will be going, oh my God, that's unbelievable. But it's just, I got your name wrong.
I'm going to have to watch this film now.
It's brilliant. I think it might still be on, it's a Channel 4 film, but it might still be on all four. But it's such a good, it's, well, even if you have to rent it, it is utterly like one of the best films.
Okay, and shall I download it and then revoice it, the whole film?
Oh, yes.
Somehow re-upload it, and the next time he's what, and then change the actor to Dan in the credits. and something else I wanted to talk about, we've been doing a good amount of time here, just while it's topical. And this is a little bit more focused on proper running chat. Are you do you know Charlotte Perdue?
No.
Good runner?
No.
Marathon runner?
No. You ask me a question, do I know this runner? Yeah, that even applies when we're doing the interviews, like literally 10 minutes before the interview. Have you heard of this people we're interviewing? Like, the answer is always no. I don't know anyone. Go on.
Now, Charlotte is a really good runner. She has at times been... I think she was Britain's fastest marathon runner about 2 years ago.
Right.
So she's basically been dropped for the Olympics. And this goes into, I'm sure this happens around the world. There is no fair system for selecting people. But it's the way in which she's been dropped. So they did say that we had our qualifiers,
yeah,
which was super cool. Chris Thompson, smashing it. Steph as well, just incredible to actually give a platform to the marathon that it doesn't normally, because they're normally surrounded by African runners who are far quicker, so we don't care by the time they come in. So the first two of those, if you came top two with a qualifying time, you qualified. Now, Charlotte wasn't selected, and she basically was injured. And through the assurances that she received from British Athletics, she was basically told not to rush back through her injury because she wouldn't necessarily need to have a very, you know, to be peaking before the Olympics and like prove herself in it with a really quick time to qualify. So she then is rejected, having followed their advice.
Wow, we haven't heard that before.
Yeah. So she took. So her quote is: "I took longer off than I wanted to, due to the fact they led me to believe that the medical exemption I would gain selection." And she feels like she's been thrown under a bus. You just think there is no perfect system. I mean, she goes on to explain. She was only running for 30 minutes a week and was 8 weeks away from being fit enough to return to full training. That's what they said in their selection notes, when actually she'd run 83 miles last week. And so, you know, they just are completely out of touch with what she's been doing. Having advised her to rest it, they then used that against her when actually she was recovered and running 83 miles a week, which I'd imagine for her is, you know, a decent amount, probably not her peak mileage. Could be, depending on a marathon style, actually. For someone like Steph, who's a cross trainer, you wouldn't be running that many miles. So, yeah, you've got to feel for her when actually she's done everything they've wanted. She's taken their advice, and there is no perfect system, whether that's just qualifying on the time or whether it's also a bit of leeway based on form. But surely if you advise people, you then have to back it up.
Yeah, it just sounds typical, doesn't it? Like it's just a typical pattern of poor communication and poor treatment. I mean, it just shows that nothing's really changing, is it? Like,
yeah.
You know, but the stories we've been hearing, you know, even from like, you know, the 10 years ago or whatever, or even longer than that, you know, you think that there must be some kind of change. But when, you know, talking to Marilyn and, you know, the way that she was treated, and just having to, you know, and this the kind of the lock-in aspect of it, of like, you know, if you're gonna be an athlete under the banner, then you have to follow the advice. It's our way or the highway. And then when you follow it to the letter, you know, even though it goes against your own instincts, and you get penalised as a result of that, you're like, well, where is there left to go? It's almost like, you know, they need like legal action or something to change this. Like, what? How? When is it going to change? How is it going to change?
Or like clear guidelines on how you communicate, like clear channels that are maybe legally binding. But if you think of someone like Linford Christie, who he won gold in his 30s, and you know he actually peaked in his 30s. He ran, was it 9.87? In his 30s, he'd never run that fast. I think the world record was 9.86 at the time. And he wouldn't have made it through in the current system, because you can't rely on if you don't know if you're going to get funding, and if you then get injured or if you're not peaking early, you're just going to leave the sport. And, you know, Charlotte would have dedicated so many hours towards this. Is she going to bother for another 4 years when she now no longer she can't be guaranteed performances?
So it feels arbitrary, doesn't it? It feels as though, you know, it's just there's no. I mean, that is the sign that a system or anything, a system, a political system, a company is broken by the fact that your actions have no. It feels like your actions have no bearing on the results. That is when injustice happens. That is when an injustice happens. That is when apathy happens. And that's the exact situation they find themselves in. If I follow this path to the exact letter and I get the results that, you know, you tell me to get, and then there's still a possibility I won't be selected because of, you know, and that's not even bringing politics into it as well. Then
yeah,
it's a massive commitment of your life.
And particularly for marathons where you only race several times, you know, you can't race every week, and you know, there's high injury rates. And it's that balance of you've got Beth Potter on one side, who has just run the fastest 5K on road ever. And she can't be selected because they were selected 2 years ago, even though she's winning triathlons.
It's weird, isn't it? Like, what? Because there's not like that with all sports, is it? Like, there's some sports, you know, some aspects of sports when, you know, their selection is happening now, even after the games are supposed to be held. I mean, why is there such a massive discrepancy? Why are different sports allowed to have different qualification periods?
Well, I do understand that, because you want to take form players or form athletes.
But there's a big possibility that they might have lost their form in that. You know, surely as close to the Olympics as possible is the best. And,
yeah.
And I suppose that then creates another injustice in the sense that, you know, the people before, they were training for those 4 years and were hitting their peak at that point. But that, I suppose, I don't know.
And even within, if you think of our marathon cycles, if you go from standing start 16 weeks, if you're, you know, a decent club runner, probably do it in 12 weeks. If you've got a high mileage background, maybe even 8 weeks, well, probably 10 weeks. So they're making, this is where it becomes complex, but actually having complex rules isn't necessarily bad. It's just about actually adhering to them and communicating clearly, because you'd really want a mix. And they've got a good system where if you finish first at the trials, you in a time fast enough to qualify for the Olympics, you qualify for the Olympics, which is fair. And then there's a bit of leeway, but it's just that grey area where they advise you something and then they go back on it. And yeah. But I mean, does this happen elsewhere in the world? You know, are people in Australia and America and New Zealand and Russia, are there controversies worldwide? Are we beating up on EA when actually it's a global phenomena, that it's just incredibly hard? You know, does someone have it right? I know the States is more purist, where you've got to be at the trials and you've got to be top four. And they've had world record holders, they've had defending champions not qualify in the past because of that, which is harsh, but at least it's
clear.
It's clear. Yeah, exactly. But does anyone have a good system? Email us or Facebook us or whatever it is. What you think on that one?
The other thing to think about with this is that, and I don't know any of the stats or anything around this, but has anyone ever gone into the Olympics as not looking to be clear of placing and has performed so incredibly well at the Olympics and has literally come out of nowhere? I know that there's loads of stuff on social media going, oh, so-and-so went to the Olympics and they had no chance, and look at them coming from behind to win all this. But has there ever been stories like that of someone going to
the Olympics? Important thing is, has there ever been, well, there's not been suggesting a doping.
Because that's just the other thing, you know, like you're talking about there with like lymphocristy and stuff like that. You know, is there performance before an event is one thing, but then at the event, you know, there's lots of other factors that come into play, you know, emotional factors and other things like that. Like I always think about Goran Ivanišević when he came into Wimbledon on a wild card, scraped in and won it. And, you know, there was no way that you'd have said he would ever win Wimbledon, but a specific set of factors led him to it. And I know it's completely different, you know, tennis and the way it's set up, but I just wonder whether, you know, you with that system that you have in the US, where there have been pure meritocracy in that, that you miss out on those opportunities for, you know, some runners may, you know, perform better with the surroundings, with the wraparound of the Olympics or the World Championships or something, you know, in the same way that football teams, you know, play better when they're at home against away. So I don't know. I suppose there's no real way of knowing that.
Well, you could certainly look at it. Would take a lot of work, but you could you could look at, I'd assume that the older someone is generally, the more nous they have and the ability to actually lean on experience as opposed to necessarily fitness or strength or, yeah, or the, you know, their exact skill at that time. So I suspect older people would be more likely to be able to come into an event not in their peak shape and still get good results. But there, I mean, there was a Turkish runner who came second, I think, in the 800 meters the year that Jenny Meadows or maybe in Marilyn was involved and didn't place. And they, I think Jenny Meadows, I might have some of the details wrong, didn't qualify for the final because this Turkish runner came out and that Turkish runner had knocked like insane amounts off her time in the 800. You know, we're not talking seconds. We're talking, I think maybe even 10, like over 10 seconds within a year. It's something ridiculous where you're like, this is, it just doesn't make any sense at all. But it's just finding those examples. And there was an American runner who, in the 60s, I believe, who was a Aboriginal American who ran from the back of the pack. No one was expecting, Bobby, I know Americans will have it kind of seared into their brains more, who I think was completely unexpected and won the whole thing. But I'd imagine it was easier to happen back then because people weren't as highly trained. There wasn't as big a system. Yeah. People weren't as well known. Well, there we go, guys. I think that's a nice little episode of the bad stuff.
The bad stuff.
But leave us some lovely reviews, people. We want funny reviews. And, you know, you can mention Dan if you'd like. Please don't talk about
mention Dan. Oh, no. Just get, if you're going to leave a review, a negative review or something, it does help, you know, with your credibility in some respects of just getting some names right.
But don't leave a negative review. Leave a positive review. And if you haven't
got a positive
yet,
review, come on, let's read a positive review.
Okay. So it's not a funny one, but this was from K2 Plan Hire. Sorry,
a very unusual name. It's
a good bit of free advertising. It's a good way to advertise yourself, actually. He said, or they said, I don't know who it is, actually, still great, still bad. But then they said, I first listened during the dry robe years. Did you know that's how they're referred to?
I don't know, but I can understand it. A bloody dry robe. It's almost as though they were like an unofficial sponsor for a while. It was almost like a third presenter.
Did I start wearing my dry robe again? I mean, it's not seen some use for some time.
I want a dry robe. I actually want a dry. I want, not only do I want a dry robe, I want to get whole family matching dry robes as well. So that, because that would be perfect.
I was recently forced by Briggsy to give away a dry robe. I should have given it to you.
Well, I want, that would have been very nice, but because I was very much against dry robes and the whole concept of it.
As you are against everything that you don't have.
Yes, that's right. until I felt the dry robes in action, and then I'm like, this makes a lot of sense. And I also feel a bit like a wizard.
So are you saying the dry robe years could return?
The dry robe years could return, but the thing is, we need dry robes because we do a lot of like sea swimming and that type of stuff, and so it is perfect for that. And yeah, but the idea of buying 4 dry robes, I'm not quite sure. I'm ready to mortgage my house for that yet.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Well, I, you know, if you want me to carry on collecting dry robes and then maybe in 4 or 5 years give you 4 of my second, you know, my hand-me-downs. Yeah, I can speak to Gideon, I can sort that out. But do matters. If there's anything you want us to talk about, if there's anything you've seen in the press or any articles, then do message us. If there's any guests you'd like to suggest, similarly, I'm david@badboyrunning.com, or you can just spam me on Facebook and spam us on Instagram. Anything you want to throw into the mix, Jody?
Yeah, if you want to get join the conversation, head over to Facebook, type in Bad Boy Runner Podcast, join the group. Make sure you get our names right. That's quite important if you're going to get in the group and start.
J-O-D-I-E. J-O-D-I-E. Thanks, sister, guys. We will see you next time.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye
yes and give me one more try. Cause a love like this should I never ever die.
Fuck you, buddy.